Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Manya, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Zama. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Lovely, great to have you on the show. Now, throughout the biblical narrative, the nuclear family is treated as the primary building block of civilization. Why can larger institutions like government or schools never successfully replace the unique role of the home?
Well, I would like to look at it especially from the biblical aspect of human creation story, or the creation account, where we see that God established the home before he established any other human institution. So marriage and family preceded civil governance, which we see now before Israel became the nation, before there was a priesthood, in essence, before there was even a church, as we refer to it today. But as we refer to it today, and this is clearly seen in the book of Genesis chapter 2, when he created man and also gave them the power to form family. So the home then poses several characteristics no institution can duplicate, by the way, because in the home we have a symbolism of permanent relational authority that is depicted in the parents and their role in terms of raising children, which is entrusted to them by God. Okay. And this natural flow of life is clearly seen in the Jewish lifestyle. We see this clearly amplified when you read Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6 to 7, where education was of primary importance, teaching the child. In fact, the Bible says when you sit, when you walk, when you lie, when you rise up, it was all more of a daily routine. Daily routine, even before a school schools would be there, in terms of the modern schools, the civil governance issues that we have, governments that we have today. So Deuteronomy 6, verse 6 to 7 tells us that from the family point of it, the influence is more continuous than it is from any other point of our human interactions. From our human interactions. So the primary foundation of every person really is the home. It's the home. And it's in the family, it's in the home setup where we see characters being built, unconditional display of emotion is also experienced. But unfortunately, this may not be the case because, you know, certain families experience this dysfunctionality as a result of sin. But the home setup becomes more of a staunch basis for one's development and preparedness in terms of reaching out into the community.
Now, when we look at the rising crime rates, civil unrest, and social decay, how can we trace these public issues back to a systematic collapse of parental authority and honor within the private home? Do we even trace it back there?
Yes, we can. I would like to agree with what you have asked me in this way. You know, even when you read the Bible, we read it from the cultural point of it, where we see the same setting, a similar setting in which we exist, and certain problems are being addressed as affecting communities, and they're being traced from homes. For example, in Romans chapter 1, verse 30, Paul addresses the issues of disobedience as contributing to the moral collapse of society, and elicit a number of sins that are morally described as affecting the society of that time, owing to the fact that there is some disconnection, disconnection from the teachings at home, and much more, they may be, as a result, a consequence of home setup being polluted, So we see an interrelatedness in these issues of civil unrest, social decay, being traced from the a poor or a collapse in the family system. Lack of parental authority may be a result of such things, and also disrespecting the elderly in society, where, like, I think yesterday we tried to hint on the fact that when people don't have the moral fiber of distinguishing the boundary upon which the commandment is given, the fifth commandment of honoring our parent, we begin to see the elderly as people who are a burden, to us, and not our responsibility. When society begins to reach that stage, and we begin to identify ourselves as independent of thought, independent of exercising the will, we realize to say, we begin to be subject to our own thinkings and imaginations, and such things, really, because of the dysfunctional family systems, we begin to see children raising themselves alone, subject to only their feelings and emotions. If they are hurt, they would want to use their pain as a means of vengeance. When they are uncomfortable, they would want to unleash the discomfort on other people, even reacting to certain things without necessarily having the ethical way of reaching a rapport with individuals. So they would just want to lash out and protest over certain things. Whilst we respect civil rights protests, that may have some credibility in terms of one speaking their mind and seeking for justice. There are certain traits of certain behaviors that are unruly, that are not engaging because of how somebody has been raised raised in shaping up their moral stance of engaging with people on a trajectory, Brother Zama, of where you can really say, let's have a discussion. But others, they just want to come out so brutal about certain things because of how they were raised in their home.
Very important. Now, what unique, irreplaceable roles do mothers and fathers play in teaching children the basic foundations of personal accountability, self-control, and unconditional love?
All right. So the two figures, and I want to be very appreciative of the audience which we are interacting with beyond you and I, because the listeners out there, not everyone would be brought up by their mother and father. Others would be single parents. Others is double orphaned. And others, definitely, they may have mother and father in their space, but the two really have not had a positive impact on them. But from appreciating the essence of why you should have a structure of father and mother, we see that the two, mother and father and mother, have a complementary role that each one of them plays in the shaping of a child, living in terms of shaping a home. You're talking of issues of accountability. You're talking about issues of self-control and unconditional love. A child basically learns from the people that are raising the child. So the moral way compass is fully based on the people that are influencing and imparting in that child. okay, imparting in that child the emotions, care issues of being accountable when they are wrong, when they've done something, they are not doing it from the point of a punitive approach, but from the disciplinary point of it. And we see that the father's role, from the biblical point of view, has always been they are called to provide leadership, protection, discipline, and model integrity. And also further, they demonstrate sacrificial responsibility. And this is perfectly appreciated from Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, where Paul instructs the fathers to bring up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This is an instruction of being given for a healthy father, for a healthy father. And the mother, on the other hand, really, we see quite a lot of clear examples. Naturally, mothers are nurturers. Mothers are nurturers. They are unique. They have this unique sense of communicating compassion, emotional security, tenderness, encouragement, and steadfast love, sacrificial love. And God usually would compare his love to that of the mother. And he says in Isaiah chapter 66, verse 13, where he talks of God being a compassionate father, as a compassionate father, as the mother is to her children. So, you know, when you don't have this complementary type of support when a child is being raised, there's a whole gap that gets created. Okay, there's a whole gap that gets created. So whilst we understand that parents cannot perfectly impart these on children, but absence of these two figures who try to display such behavior, such example, role model to children, would definitely have a very strong negative impact on that, on a child being raised in a particular society, for example.
When we look at the modern cultural shifts, they frequently mock or deconstruct or rewrite traditional family structures. Now, from a historical spiritual perspective, how do these shifts threaten the long-term survival of a nation, even?
I'm thinking about the question that you've asked, and as I'm reflecting, there is when we do a historical study of nations, how nations fall, you get to see that much of these declines are not merely through military defeat, but through moral decay. Through moral decay. And moral decay really is foundational from the home setup. Let us be watchful of what we are calling civilization. If this civilization is not putting up the bonds of family ties, strengthening of family ties, civilization of that kind is just but a fire leading us to moral decay. Remember, the family fiber structure, or the family structure as put by God, and I would want to emphatically shift my attention to talk about God's structure of how we should exist. In spite of you not having maybe father, mother as your in existence, we appreciate the fact that life happens in such a way that you may lose your parents and anything else can happen and you are into existence. God really, I can safely say, had a backup, because if a community is a community, a group of people working together, living together, doing things together, having a common interest, you would still survive without your biological parents. You would still be there without your biological parents, and you still have a good moral fiber without necessarily getting it from your home. And this is essentially what God did when he created humanity. Humanity has to exist in form of a community where people are not doing things in the interest of themselves, but in the interest of everyone else. So the challenge really that we can pick from even the ancient times, nations, civilizations of the past, and the falling of nations is the lesson of neglecting the simple basic structure of community sense, having a strong community sense. And the ridiculing such kind of a structure as an archaic thing, as something that has no value. I don't know about you where you are in South Africa there. For us here, once upon a time in my growing up, you'd realize that any other person, elderly, can reprimand you and you still take it as your parents doing it.
True.
Yeah. True. It's your parents doing it. But today it's quite difficult. You would want to even stand toe to toe with them and say, what are you telling me? What do you know about life? Well, do you even understand what I'm going through there and everything? You can say whatever seemingly plausible excuses you may have or ways of justifying that. But in essence, the community sense of living, the extended family structures that we grew up in are still relevant even today. In as much as we may have busy schedules, but we can endeavor to maintain the bonds of being together. And this is exactly what church begins to model. When you look at the church structure, when people meet in one place, they are modeling a community structure, a formidable, a strong community culture, which drives us back to say, if we embrace the system that cares for the community, cares for each other as a community, certain things, certain declines, certain challenges would definitely not be the experiences we're having currently.
Now, we must acknowledge that the massive reality of a single parent household and fractures family today. I mean, it's our reality. We live with that. How can faith communities, churches, and extended families step in to help those single-headed families to instill the core value of honor?
Yeah. So this is almost like I mentioned previously, where we are seeing that people are losing touch with community, having the definition of what a community is. Okay, what a community is. And we see institutions like the church bridging the gap to practice the purity of religion that espouses the values of what it means to be a community. You know, like the church, you have people that are of a different background, different religion, different upbringing, rather, different gender, of course. They are just all different in a lot of things, different experiences of life. But they are espoused into one space called the church, which does not treat them as they may be different, but it relates with them as an institution of oneness, okay, oneness. One people, one voice, one faith, one hope, and everything. And there's no segregation by race and everything. So a healthy church then produces a healthy people, because it doesn't segregate based on who you are, your fame, your titles, and everything, but it brings people into one space for one function. And that is to realize that we are all created by God for the same purpose, that is to reflect his image in us. And the church then becomes a place of parental support. The church where I am currently, I've seen quite amazing things that have been practiced. It's a church that is which was founded by university students from the University of Zambia, and the way they connect with each other from campus life, even up to now when they have children, they have grandchildren, you can tell that that has helped them transition through many things of life and creating this intergenerational friendships where their children, their grandchildren are like, they are a family. They are supporting each other. They are keeping each other. And such are things really that we see as benefits coming from institutions like the church. So single parenting then is answered through a healthy community structure, because we need to understand that the support system purely can either come from the community where one is residence, that is basically your home. Sometimes because of the nature homes are, homes can be a tough place to be. A person may really leave and forsake their home. But we see coming to one's aid institutions like the church, which will come in, or even community centers where people have embraced the strong sense of community, creating an avenue for people who are distressed by their homes, finding that care from them. So we want to appreciate, Brother Zama, this one fact that we can't do life alone. We can't do life alone. Mm. And it should be within our nature, and it should be within each one of us to understand that life was never built to be alone. So in spite of what challenges one may go through, single parenting or not having parents at least there should be that strength, that sense of understanding that you have support, care that can be given to you in other ways other than what you may think, which is just limited to a family setting. Yeah, to a family setting of some sort. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's move towards the close of our conversation this afternoon. And moving from the theory to action, what practical strategies can local neighborhoods, faith groups, and communities implement to intentionally rebuild a center that fiercely protects and respects families?
Number one, I would say, let's have a very strong sense and value of what a family is. Because the family institution is the birthplace of everything. Chaos, order, love, hurt, and all those things can be birthed from the family. And if we appreciate it from the point of God, the family was never meant to be a battlefield. The family was meant to be a place where all these things should be corrected, quenched, and everything. But dysfunctionality, like we mentioned, begins to be a reality of the day. So maybe some of the things I can put out there in terms of strengthening our strategies that can help, this would be, we need to understand, first of all, a family begins through marriage.
Marriage
principles have to be straightened. Why are you marrying? Why are you getting into marriage? Is it just for fun? Is it a responsibility? Are you understanding the commitment that is there? So seek for support guidance before you even get into one, because your responsibility begins to grow as one begins to also have children, responsibility over nurturing and mentoring young people as they are growing. Okay. Secondly, we are talking about being the community, creating support programs that help parents with practical instructions on how to really do discipline, how to communicate effectively with a child, and from the church point of view, enhancing family worship services, and how that can be done even in amidst difficult busyness of our schedules. We also need to encourage networkings that create intergenerational relationships. So when your friends, you have friends, build a healthy relationship with friends that can transition into your children, so that your children can see how healthy your friendships have been, and they can also emulate by networking with the children of your friends. Then we'll carry on a legacy that really speaks to certain values that we espouse as friends, as colleagues, and as individuals of a particular community. Further, we can also say, let us reconcile clearly as families. Many things are affecting the upbringing of children, where children don't have time or not even a connection with the extended families. Sometimes their grandparents and other relatives, their uncles, their aunties, they don't have that linkage with them. This can be as a result of challenges of not forgiving each other because of certain issues that arose, and people have shut down. They want to live alone with their children. So this cuts them off from the extended family, which may not essentially be healthy. So building a strong, reconcilable extended family would also help as a strategy, really, Brother Zama, that can protect and build this kind of culture, which also values the essence of why they should be a family in the first place.
Yeah. Man, it's a wonderful one. I must thank you so much, Pastor, for coming through. What a wonderful topic. I'm sad that we're going to have to conclude tomorrow. So we're going to be contacting you tomorrow once again. One last time, it's a Friday, so that we can actually conclude this particular discussion. Thank you so much for coming through today.
Much appreciated. It's good that today we've managed to conversate. And oh, yes. I hope tomorrow will also be a favorable day. So thank you so much. And there's hope to you, Ali, who's listening out there. There's hope that God has put for us in spite of the challenges that we are seeing around us. God is the healer. God is the owner of families. So do your honest part and you will see how God will work through your being honest in managing these issues in your family. Thank you so much and God bless.
Thank you so much and blessings to you too. Thank you.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.